Labor and Commerce will come to order at 3:20 p.m. on April 1st. And no jokes today, please. With us, we have Representative Sadler, Representative Johnson, Representative Miller, Representative Holmes, myself, Chair Olson. We have the Speaker in another meeting, and Representative Thompson in transit somewhere. Was that a motion to adjourn?
Second.
I ask everybody to please turn off their cell phones or put them on vibrate. One item on the calendar today, House Bill 72. We've been joined by Representative Thompson, so we pretty much, oh, we got a six-pack. And carrying House Bill 72 will be the sponsor, Representative Max Gruenberg and Gretchen Staff. Welcome back. And who's first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just introduce Gretchen Staff.
Hi, Gretchen.
And believe me, it's a pleasure.
That may be the smartest thing I've seen you do in a while.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate the work that the Chair and Representative Holmes have done on this over a long period of time, and I know a number of you have been involved too. I, first of all, very much appreciate fast-tracking the criminal and the civil penalties, which were the priorities of the Department of Law and the most immediate part of the bill. And what we've done here is we have, a proposed CES, and if the Chair is willing and somebody can offer that, I'll explain the differences.
Yeah, I'd entertain a motion to actually adopt the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the CS for House Bill number 72, designated 27 LS 0381/M-32111.
And seeing no opposition, we'll adopt it. And basically, this took out the section that sent another bill that's already gone through. So I don't think we need to bring that portion up for discussion.
I'll object to my own motion. I guess.
No, nah, let Dan do it.
Object.
How dare you? I will ask Ms. Staff to very briefly explain the differences, and we have a sheet that sets them out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gretchen Staff. I am a legislative aide for Representative Max Gruenberg. And you should have a sheet in front of you that explains the changes between the CS and the original version of the bill. I will go through those very quickly. I'm going to skip to the second item on your explanation of changes sheet, because that is the main change. We took out sections 10 and 11 of the original bill, which is on page 4, lines 3 through 18 of the original bill. And those were the sections dealing with civil and criminal penalties actionable by the Attorney General. As the Chair mentioned, we just took those out simply because those exact provisions are already moving forward in another bill. The other change that we made was on page 2, line 17 of the original bill, and we just changed the phrase "this chapter" to AS 4550-562 through 4550-570, just to make it clear that in that section we were only referring to antitrust violations. This chapter would have referred to a host of other provisions that we weren't necessarily addressing with this bill. So that was just an oversight when the bill was drafted, and we corrected that. And the only other change was the title was altered to account for these other changes in the bill.
So can you walk us through all the sections except for 10 and 11 on the sectional?
I can absolutely do that, Mr. Chairman. And first, before I start, I don't know if it's the will of the committee to get a brief overview of what the bill does.
Certainly.
Okay.
You've got the whole committee.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Basically, what House Bill 72 will do is expand the pool of individuals who can bring a suit for an antitrust violation. Under current Alaska law, only the Attorney General or direct purchasers, meaning people who buy something directly from an antitrust violator, can bring a suit for antitrust violations. Right now, the Attorney General can sue to recover indirect damages from upstream violators, but there's no private right of action. And to clarify, I think the best way to explain what we mean by indirect purchasers and indirect damages is through a hypothetical. So I'll just go through that really quick. For instance, if two computer chip manufacturers were colluding and setting the price for their chips artificially high, they would then sell those chips to a computer manufacturer, say Dell. And then Dell would in turn sell those computers to you, the consumer. Under current law, you as the consumer could not sue the computer chip manufacturer for their antitrust violations, even though you probably had to pay a much higher price for the computer. Only Dell could bring a suit because they directly bought those chips from the computer chip manufacturer who was colluding to set the price artificially high. So this bill would just allow you as the consumer to bring a suit against the antitrust violator. Of course, if you could prove, you still have to prove that there was indeed an antitrust violation happening. The main reason that we feel that this is necessary is that just because the Attorney General at this point has limited resources and don't necessarily always have the staff or the money to go forward with every suit. So creating a private right of action for indirect purchasers would be an efficient and cheap means for the state to ensure that there was redress available to the citizens without expending state funds. And whenever an indirect purchaser would bring a suit for an antitrust violation, they're required to notify the Attorney General under this bill. And I'll go through the sections individually so you can see where that is in the bill. But they're required to notify the Attorney General. On that point, if the Attorney General wants to make a motion to intervene in the suit, if they feel that it's in the best interest of Alaskans, then they are free to do that at any point. And just as background information, the trend right now in the U.S. is to allow for an indirect, for a private right of action for indirect purchasers. There are about 30 states, as you can see from your map in front of you, that allow for the recovery of indirect damages. And of those 30, only 9 restrict that right of action to the Attorney General, and that's including Alaska right now. The other 21 allow for private individuals to bring suit for indirect damages as well. And they have not seen a flood of suits. It seemed to work out well at other jurisdictions. So at this point, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to go through a sectional.
Any questions before we get to the section? Representative Sadler, followed by Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, you said that private individuals bringing action must notify the Attorney General of doing so, and the AG can join in if he or she so chooses.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes.
So deputizing people to pursue antitrust violations, in essence. Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I say? As you may remember from our discussion last year.
Could we have your name and affiliation for the record?
I'm Max Gruenberg. I represent House District 20, Mountain View, Russian Jack. I'm a member of no political party. I'm a Democrat.
No organized.
No organized. How to blow a simple joke. The reason for this legislation is because of a U.S. Supreme Court case called Illinois Brick. And Illinois Brick construed the federal antitrust statutes. And it held that the federal law does not authorize a lawsuit for indirect damages. However, the states are free to pass their own little antitrust acts allowing indirect damages. And as Gretchen said, you have somebody way up the line colluding, let's say the manufacturer of asphalt, the gravel manufacturers collude to set the price. And the gravel goes into the asphalt sold to the contractor then paves the municipal street. And it's ultimately, in that case, the municipality, and this bill will allow the municipality or the ultimate consumer, if it's a business or whoever it is, to get recompensed for that. So traditionally, and this is, we really should get these folks, we'll get you a better map. This is in living color. It's red and everything else. You can't really see in this thing.
Red and blue?
No, red and checked. Anyway,
brick
it looks like a sport coat I own.
Is it brick red? Illinois brick.
But traditionally, the states did not have any statutes dealing with indirect damages because they didn't think they needed them. They thought they were covered by the federal law. And that's why a lot of the states have not yet gotten on board in dealing with the antitrust, with the indirect damages. Initially, there was some concern that this would open a floodgate and there'd be a lot of cases. And so a number of the states started out, the first step was to allow the Attorney General to bring these cases. And now people are feeling much more comfortable and they're allowing private individuals to do this. This is important because these are very tough cases. They're involving often big manufacturers or businesses, and people have to band together in class actions. And usually what they're doing is one lawsuit somewhere proceeds in federal court somewhere usually. And as a result, everybody else joins into the one case and it's all consolidated. The Attorney General, through the National Association of Attorneys General, communicate and they let folks know which is the main case that's proceeding. And that's the reason we have, and Gretchen will go over in this, the requirement that Mr. Sniffen wanted, Ed Sniffen, who's the AG who handles this for the state. So they're notified, and that way they can go into court and say, you should abstain and direct the people to go into federal court in Nebraska, where the main case is proceeding, and will allow them to seek intervention as necessary. And that is the check and balance, and that was essential. And Mr. Sniffen, unfortunately, is not able to be with us today because he's flying, he's in the air. But he said that he wanted the committee to know that this has not opened the floodgates. And over the years, we passed the statute allowing the AG to bring these indirect damage lawsuits during the Murkowski administration. I don't remember whether it was the 23rd or the 24th state legislature, but that was the first step. And so we've had 6 or 7 years to look at it, and so he feels comfortable about this now. But Cindy Drinkwater, who's another assistant attorney general, is on the phone, I understand, to help. But basically, that's why we are where we are. And it's very difficult, particularly in a state, a small state like Alaska, if we have to pursue this on our own. It's much better to be able to join in. And what the effect of this bill will be, generally, is that the, let's say there are 2,500 or let's say 1,000 Alaskans who've been damaged by the fact that the computer chips at Best Buy are have been the price fixed. They would then, through their attorney, seek to intervene in the lawsuit in Nebraska, we'll say, or be added. And they would add one additional count to the complaint. And the complaint would be a count under Alaska state law. And we'd have to do it under state law because, as I've said, the federal law doesn't allow it. And this would show that these folks who bought the computer chip through the computer in Alaska and live in Alaska have standing to join the lawsuit and get recompensed. And that's why it's so important we pass this bill, because it will protect the consumers. And there are not going to be a bunch of lawsuits. They'll be joining together, but they will add a count that covers this new Alaska law. I hope that helps put this in perspective, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
If you'd like
to. Representative Johnson.
I only had one question, but after that I have several. is there anything keeping an Alaskan from joining in a lawsuit in Nebraska? I mean, you see the ads all the time. If you've been harmed by something or something, Celebrex, call Smith, Barney, Frankenstein, and Schmitz, and be involved. So is there anything that keeps an individual Alaskan from calling up this firm and saying, I've been damaged, I want to be part of it?
Through the chair. No. This will actually not affect your right to do that. But unless you were damaged in Nebraska, you wouldn't be covered by any state law. They have to apply the choice of law for Alaska where you bought the equipment. You wouldn't have a cause of action for indirect damages under Nebraska law because you hadn't purchased it in Nebraska. That's why it's a choice of law question. You have to be able to apply the law of the place where the purchase was made.
So to go to the Celebrex or some drug company, you're telling me that before I could answer that ad, if I was damaged, I had to buy it in the ad where the suit was being filed?
It would, I believe, and again, this is a choice of law question, normally they would apply the law of the place where the transaction occurred, unless it was like mailed to you or something, but then it would once again have occurred in Alaska.
I'm having the exact same confusion you are. So okay. I think to clarify, we're saying right now, if I bought the Celebrex in Anchorage and there were a class action in Nebraska, I couldn't really effectively join that class action in Nebraska because I would have no way to recover. So basically, I wouldn't be able to join that class action now, but under this bill, I would be able to join the class action. Is that correct? That is correct.
And it's not a question of the joining together as much as the question of whether you have a cause of action.
Yeah. Representative Johnson.
But if I've been wronged, I have a cause of action.
No.
You only have a cause of action if the law of the jurisdiction where you suffered the damage gives you a cause of action.
So even though it's not clear because it's in court, it is an antitrust violation. I cannot join in that because the state of Alaska doesn't allow individuals to do that. Is that what I'm hearing?
In this particular area of the law, that's exactly the right answer. That's why this is important. It's not screwing around with anything or anybody. It is just to allow Alaskans who are damaged to get reimbursed. And I guess they can get treble damages in some cases.
Next question. Or follow-up.
Well, I'm just wondering why they're, you know, and maybe the ads are different about, and you know, pick on a drug of some kind. We don't have this in Alaska. Why are they spending money advertising to reach Alaskans when they have no recourse?
Through the chair. Number one, those cases are generally not antitrust cases. They deal with, are you damaged because you were a ship worker and got asbestos poisoning or something like that? They're not generally antitrust. They're product liability cases. Every state allows you to sue if your lawnmower cuts off your leg or whatever it is because, the nut flies off or the drug doesn't work. This is a very unusual area of law, the antitrust area. And number two, they make it very clear that all that law firm is sort of a clearinghouse, and they will then determine whether you do have a right to sue, and they're usually associated with lawyers in the various jurisdictions, and they would then take your name, have their associated lawyer in Alaska talk to you, see if there's a cause of action, and if there is, then the two lawyers would make arrangements for you to join in. It's just really to get your name so that they can contact you.
Okay. And if I could, sure, at some point, certainly. I have some other questions. You said that there have been very few or minimal number of cases, or hasn't been a floodgate, I think was your term. Can you tell me how many cases there have actually been?
Well, antitrust cases, no, I can't. I mean, that's I just don't know. This is...
I mean, I guess what I'm getting to, do we have a solution looking for a problem?
No. Okay. This is not. This is a serious... It is a serious defect in the law that we just need to fix.
Mr. Chairman, I feel like I've been dropped in the middle of the judiciary zone.
That's where it goes next.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Big Max, because my six-day-old son is Little Max.
I'm going to meet this
Out of curiosity, I'm kind of confused a little bit on we're talking Nebraska and somebody's bringing a lawsuit, and we can join in on that lawsuit. Mm-hmm. But they might have completely different laws on how much you can recover in Nebraska compared to Alaska, and we're trying to operate under Alaska law. So how does this all fit together?
Okay, if through the chair. Let us say that there's a class action or an action involving... Class action means you don't name the plaintiffs. You have Joe Doakes as a representative of a certain class. On the other hand, you might have 70 people who are named. Let's make it simpler and say it's 70 people named people. 10 of them are from Alaska. The complaint would, in federal court, the first part of the complaint is jurisdiction, and it would say that the plaintiffs are residents of various states. The following are residents of Nebraska, the following are residents of Arizona, the following are residents of Alaska. Defendant is a Delaware corporation with its main operations in Omaha. The actions that involve this case occurred around the country through the sale of computer chips. And then it would have one set of paragraphs dealing, well, then it would say that the defendant, these two defendants, that one of which was in Nebraska and one of which was in Minnesota or whatever, colluded to fix the price of chips. And these people in various locations suffered damages to be determined at trial. The prayer would then say, they'd have to be generally complete diversity. Like, it's not person A and B from the same state. They'd have to be generally people from different states. That's under federal law. And there's the following. The folks in Arizona would be recovering under Arizona's statute here, the folks in Alaska under Alaska statute here, and it would go through and it would set forth the statutory basis of each state. So we wouldn't be going under Nebraska law, we wouldn't be going under Arizona law, we'd go under Alaska law. And it's a very long complaint, but it's very carefully laid out so that the judge and ultimately the jury would see for which group of plaintiffs Alaska law applies. And in this case, through the chair, Representative Thompson, it would only cover the Alaskans who purchased in Alaska.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Grunberg, you've used the example of manufacture of computer chips as your example for this. It would probably help me a little bit, not knowing that much about antitrust law or antitrust anything. I'm a pretty trusting guy. If you could give me just another example of what kind of would be an example of an antitrust violation.
Did you want to get it? Go ahead.
Sure.
I sort of took
up through the chair, Representative Sadler, another example could be, for instance, drug companies colluding and setting the price of drugs quite high. Which is, I think, as there have actually been suits over that. Then if the drug manufacturer would then sell that drug to a distributor who would sell it to a pharmacy, and then you as the consumer would buy it from the pharmacy. And so you would be an indirect purchaser, having bought it several steps down the line from the original manufacturer who's colluding to set the price artificially high. So it's any time an indirect purchaser is basically any time you would be an indirect purchaser if there was some upstream antitrust violation, if you weren't directly handing over your money to the person or to the corporation who had committed the antitrust violation. So it's basically just an upstream issue.
And a follow-up question for either of you, better able to answer than they. How much antitrust violations are done, how much of the injury done from antitrust violations is done directly and how much directly?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think I would defer to the Department of Law on that question. Unfortunately, Ed Sniffen, who does all the antitrust work, was unavailable to be here today, but perhaps Cindy Drinkwater could be able to answer that question better than I could.
And I might add, we're going to be hearing the bill again next week after Ed gets back, but I found out after we scheduled it that he was going to be in D.C., and I thought we could get the heavy lifting done today, but I do believe we have Cindy with us. Cindy, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I am here.
You want to take a shot at that question, or would you like it repeated?
Mr. Chair, I heard the question, and for the record, this is Cindy Drinkwater. I am an Assistant Attorney General in the Consumer Protection Unit. I'm in the uncomfortable position of not really having much experience in the antitrust area. As has been pointed out, Ed Sniffen is the attorney who handles those matters. So rather than me making a stab at it, if the committee is planning to set it over, it might be, I would suggest that it might be most efficient for your time today to defer that question to him.
No, well, thank you, particularly for your candor. I think it will speed things up, but let's see, where were we? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of that, if we could just get the bill out and get it presented, then maybe we could wait for Mr. Sniffen.
Yeah, it's my understanding he is on his way back right now, so yeah, there shouldn't be any problem getting him at
just
the...
Get the information out on the floor and then give me time in my simple brain to start digesting it.
I know you're going to be planning and plotting all weekend.
But Representative Grunberg,
I'd like to interject at this point in time that myself, Representative Holmes, and Representative Grunberg have all been working with Ed Sniffen on this issue for, I believe, over a year.
Oh,
so
you have a head start.
There's been plenty of planning and
planning. Oh, no, I'm still confused. But
oh, okay. It would help, and I do appreciate your hearing this, and I really appreciate your holding it over. I have a doctor appointment.
No, I move we adjourn.
Let's finish up the presentation. We'll hold it over.
Seriously, folks, if you have additional questions, and you bring them up now, if we can answer them, we will. If not, we'll take notes with you. And we'll get you answers. And if you think in the meantime, if you'd let Ms. Staff know, we'll attempt to get you answers. And I believe Ms. Representative Holmes actually took antitrust law and knows a lot more about it than I do.
I think I might, I hate to say this because then I put myself in trouble, but I think I might have set the curve in my antitrust class.
Is that good or bad?
It means I was a bit of an antitrust geek.
You can't trust her.
It means you've got the highest grade in the class.
Not to be trusted.
I was a bit of an antitrust and regulated industries geek in law school.
So I bet if we could get Gretchen to walk us through the rest of the sectional, we could probably get Max to his doctor's appointment.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
In fact, Representative Grunberg, if you want to leave right now, we can beat up on Gretchen the rest of the year.
I have a few more minutes, but I'm willing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All righty, so we can turn our attention to Section 1. And Section 1 just allows both indirect and direct purchasers to bring an action to terminate a prohibited interlocking relationship. So if the two companies were inappropriately joined and say there's a monopoly or something like that, somebody that was indirectly damaged could bring a suit under this section. Section 2 allows both direct and indirect purchasers to recover money damages under paragraph 1, which is lines 10 through 13 of page 2. They can be awarded up to 3 times the amount of damages sustained plus the cost of the suit, including reasonable attorney's fees. And under paragraph 2, which is on lines 14 through 16, they can also get an injunction to enjoin the unlawful practice to make sure that the antitrust violation doesn't continue. Section 3, the first paragraph, the one that I mentioned that would require the plaintiff bringing an antitrust suit to notify the Attorney General, and that would just give the Attorney General a heads up that that this action is proceeding, and then the Attorney General could then decide what action, if any, they wanted to take from there. The next paragraph is defining a person, which I skipped over that in the first section as well. We've defined a person throughout the entire bill to take on the meaning of the same meaning as it is in Title I, which applies to all Alaska statutes unless otherwise specified, which would just be it would include the state, political subdivision of the state, including home rule or general law, city or borough, and other governmental entities, including the Alaska Railroad and University of Alaska. Section 4 just clarifies that the Attorney General can bring a suit for equitable relief as well as monetary relief, and that is really already the state of the law, but that's just a clarifying change. Section 5 is similar. It says that the Attorney General can get equitable relief, but this time on behalf of Alaskan citizens, if they bring a suit on behalf of others. Section 6 through 11 are all conforming changes. They just...
we took out 10 and 11, didn't we?
Sorry.
New
section, yeah. 11.
Oh, yes. Okay. New.
Yes. The original 10 and 11 are deleted, and so there are other paragraphs that have taken place. They got bumped up. So, yes, the new sections 6 through 11 are just clarifying changes that just change some stylistic wording and also add in the definition of person in a couple other sections. Section 12 clarifies that the remedies listed are available at the discretion of the judge, those remedies include a judge ordering the revocation or suspension of a business organization's charter or license or anything like that. That's really already the state of the law as well, and this is just in there to make sure that there's no confusion as to whether those remedies are available. And
if I may, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Section 12 is very important because it expands the ability of a court to order additional remedies. This section is based on an Idaho law, and the court may order, I'm at the bottom of page 4, Mr. Chair, the revocation, forfeiture, or suspension of the business organization's charter, franchise, certificate authority, privilege, or license, and may even order the dissolution of the business organization or the divestiture of any asset. And this was important in the Ma Bell case, for example. It is an extremely important tool. We don't anticipate that it ought to be used very often, but merely the threat of being able to do this is often enough to get compliance and the people to abide by the law. It's an extremely important tool.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have very little manufacturing here that's going to manufacture something that's going to put it into a product. So we're talking about, and let's use the chip makers, they're in Japan. So Alaskan law is going, we're going to threaten them by saying we're going to dissolve you?
No, through the chair. I'd like to leave that for Ed, if I can. My view, can we reserve that question?
Sure, not a problem.
I think the answer to that question would be no, because we don't have jurisdiction over the Japanese Home Office. But I want, let's make a note of that. Please, let's ask Mr. Sniffen. Don't rely on what I'm saying.
I rarely do. It's April 1st, Max. I'm just having fun. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry.
Representative Miller.
I want to be sure that you get the right information.
Let's go back to the Japanese question just for a second. I mean, do Japanese companies even have an antitrust law that would fall in under any American jurisdiction? So if you're going to chase something back that far, we don't have any jurisdiction there anyway.
Mr. Chair, there are two parts of a lawsuit. One is liability. The other is remedy. And this bill deals with the remedies. The question of the liability does not depend upon, in this case, where the corporation is located, but where the illegal action took place. If the illegal price fixing took place in Japan, then we wouldn't have any jurisdiction over that. If the illegal price fixing took place here, or the injury took place here, they could get money damages here because they were injured here. And the question you would have, this is a very complicated question. We would have jurisdiction over the Japanese company because they're conducting business in the United States. I do not believe, and this again goes back to you, that we could order the dissolution because that would be in Japan. And that's part of the remedy that we probably wouldn't have have jurisdiction over.
Oh. So let me just play the devil's advocate here. We'll say that whatever occurred took place in New Jersey. Couple of companies got together, fixed some prices, sold some products, and you and I bought a couple of them here in Alaska. You'll have to forgive me because I do see any number of attorneys sitting at the table. Which court would...
Not at this table, only one.
Well, I'm seeing two others and this one here, so I'm sort of surrounded.
You're pointing this way.
So which court would actually have jurisdiction for me to take my case? Should this go into statute, you know, where do I start? I'm thinking federal court. You may have another opinion.
Well, the question would be in what state, federal court, where? I thought you're not asking whether it's state versus federal, but you're asking in which jurisdiction of
yes.
Federal. You certainly could sue them in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you could also sue them in Alaska because you were damaged in Alaska. Please, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I hope that all my answers, if Representative Holmes disagrees, please tell me because I could be wrong. But my understanding, and as you guys know, I'm a family lawyer, did divorce it, I didn't do this. You would have your choice. You could sue in Alaska because you were damaged here. You could sue in New Jersey because the collusion took place there.
Okay.
It's a different question as to what choice of law. And so an Alaska court can apply New Jersey law or Alaska law and vice versa. They're two entirely different issues. Number one is where the case is brought, and a third question is state versus federal. And the second question is the choice of law to be applied. And third, really, is the choice of law for the liability. And a subsidiary of that is the choice of law to be applied for the remedy. This ain't a simple question. It's very logical from a legal point of view, but you've got to break it down.
So the follow-up to that question, if I might, Mr. Chairman, is... If I'm reading this last section on page 4, starting at line 28, it is saying the court may order the revocation, et cetera, of somebody's charter. So we're still talking about a couple of companies in New Jersey who violated the antitrust provisions. So which court are we talking about? A court in Alaska could say, okay, you kids are out of business now? I'm suspending your license?
That is a question that I want to defer, and the reason is my feeling, Representative.
Defer.
Yeah, I want to defer because let's say you're talking about the corporate charter, the business license. That is under the auspices of the state of New Jersey, and we don't have any jurisdiction to do anything over that here. This basically would most likely apply to an Alaska corporation.
Representative Johnson, followed by Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a federal law that allows an indirect damage to sue in federal court?
Through the chair. No, that's what Illinois BRIC was about.
Okay.
That's why we need to pass this.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do agree that we should defer the answer to Representative Miller's, the final answer to when it Sniffen gets back, but what you might be able to do under this section would be not to force New Jersey to take away their certification, but Alaska might be able to take away their right to do business in Alaska. So that there might be certain things like that. But we should wait and get more input later.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, we might have jurisdiction to order the company to do something, like to seek a dissolution or something. I don't know. Because we would have jurisdiction over the company itself. I'm going to defer.
Gretchen.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next to the last section, I think.
Yes, I think we're down to sections 13 and 14. Section 13 on page 5 is another just conforming section, and section 14 is the repealer section. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that concludes the sectional. We're happy to take other questions.
Boy, I've got one. Do you have a half hour this weekend? No more than a half hour?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I do.
I'd like to know if this would apply to a case that took place in California a few years ago called Sempra and El Paso Natural Gas versus the state of California. And there's volumes of information on it, but I'm not an attorney, so it doesn't do me any good. I know the nature of the case and the fact that it was finally settled out of court. They started out at $25 billion, but it came down less because ultimately the defendants were sued by, I think, 200 political subdivisions in California, plus the state of California, plus manufacturers, business owners, everybody except homeowners. But I'd like to know if this would apply to a situation like that. But it should be relatively, I mean, I don't expect you to spend a whole bunch of time on it, but it ought to be pretty easy to bring up.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to look into that.
Mr. Chair, there's one other provision in here. And we can go over the repealers. I don't know if we have those statutes here.
I don't have them.
Okay. We're going to reserve a real discussion of Section 14. I think those are conforming repealers, but I don't have them here. So we'll put that on the agenda for next time, if that's okay. But I'd like to call the committee's attention to Section 10. And Mr. Sniffen will talk about this. But this is a proof of aggregate damages, allowing the use. Right now, the Attorney General can use statistical sampling and sampling methods and other reasonable methods of estimating aggregate damages. That is a very important tool in the prosecution of these cases, and we're going to put that on the list to talk about. I'd like Ed to talk about that next time. You folks need to know that's an important provision in the bill, and that is just part and parcel of the indirect damages aspect here.
Well, I might add that we had a similar bill to this last year that was much longer. This one is more concise. I was thoroughly confused by that one. This one I'm only mildly confused, so I'm getting better. We're moving in the right direction. And I hope a few of the other people are confused too, because I don't want to be the only one. I know Lindsay's, or Representative Holmes, is not confused, but she's, well, you were last time though, come to think of it. But anyway, with that, I think
I am confused.
Yeah, do we have any more questions for this afternoon?
Just one really quick one. On page 3, line 1, there's a Latin phrase in there that I think I know what it means literally, but I don't think that I know what it means legally. Parens patriae?
Patria.
Through the chair, Representative Miller, that just means that the Attorney General would be bringing the suit on someone's behalf as basically a guardian of their rights.
And it's a legal term of art.
That's what I figured. Okay, thank you.
Well, with that, I think we'll hold it over until Ed gets back. Well, it's not proper. Until Deputy Attorney General Ed Stippen returns.
Thank you. We'll try to get
Thank you very much. We got our color map. And with that, we'll adjourn at 4:05.